Doc Rivers continues to time and time again not get it when it comes to getting... Oh! Let him play!
Down 21 to nothing in the fourth quarter, they kicked a field goal. Fire everybody. Disband the program.
Oh yeah, another clank by Carmelo. Oh, that poor Porzingis!
I like that, Dave. I'm in foreclosure because I lost my arch.
From Los Angeles, this is Dave in the City, brought to you by Locks of the Week Radio. Now, here's Dave Medina.
Good evening, sports fans, and a pleasure to have you here for the big football show. Good to have you back with us in the city from the Dave in the City studios in sunny Southern California. We are here to recap what was a most wonderful, well, it was a very exciting championship game for college football this year. It played in Atlanta between the Alabama Crimson Tide and the Georgia Bulldogs. And we're here to talk about it with our friends John in Connecticut and Andy in Seattle. We had scheduled Ron in New Jersey, but he cannot make it tonight. But he does send his best from New Jersey. And we'll take it from there. So really good game. And in addition to our college football talk, we'll talk about the bowl season. And then we'll segue into the NFL and recap a very wild NFL weekend in the pros. Upsets here and there. Great game at the end. Wound up being a wild game, maybe. I don't know. Great. Yeah, I guess you could say a great game because the quarterbacking was pretty good. So we'll get into all of it today here in the city. Well, let's go ahead and start. Andy should be joining us in just a moment. John's with us now. So we certainly have saw everything on the line, all the marbles on Monday night. It was a tremendous championship game, Alabama the victors, and it all started with a roll of dice at halftime when Nick Saban went to his new quarterback, Tua Tagovailoa over Jalen Hurts. It was a bold move, but it paid off. And what happened next was pretty fantastic. Let's hit it! Well, let's do it. Let's recap the entire college football season and the playoff and the championship game. We should also recap our picks over the last year. And in week 16, this is how it went. John had a great week 16, going 3-1. Small consolation, I'm sure, but still a very good week. And I, Dave, went 2-1-1. Ron went 2-2. Andy went 1-1-2. And in guest picks, Kevin on the Cape went 1-3. So so having all that together, it is Andy in Seattle who wins the contest with a final record for the season of 31-25-4. And in second place for the year, Ron in New Jersey at 31-28-1. And Dave in third place at 30-28-2. And John in last at 23-35-2. The guest picks this year, another solid year for the guest pickers. They went 34-24-2 for the 2017 season. So that's where we begin tonight. Congrats to Andy. Kudos to him for a good year. Solid from beginning to end. It was he was in the lead for much of that contest. But props to Biebs as well, because he had the same number of wins at the end of the year too. So definitely a good year overall for the panel, and hopefully more of the same next year. So let's get into the particulars now with football. We'll start by introducing our group. Again, Ron will be, I would say, sending the picks via the text, but he sends his thoughts via the text this time around since he's out of the mix tonight on air. So let's then bring in John in Connecticut. And John, it's good to have you back. Happy New Year. And when is it too late to say Happy New Year? I don't know. But Happy New Year, John. How's it going tonight?
Good, Dave. Yeah, January 10th, I think we can still say Happy New Year since we haven't been on since before the holidays. So, Happy New Year. Hope you had a good holiday season. Good to be back to talk a little football, and definitely some interesting events since we've last had the show.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting. We have even more coaching changes, both in college and in the pros. So it should be a good time tonight to talk about all of it. Let's also bring in Andy in Seattle. Happy New Year, and again, good job out of you with the picks. Andy, how's it going tonight?
Oh, hey, Dave. Happy New Year. Yeah, you know what? Sometimes I go outside our brain to get some advice on games, and tonight we asked the self-described pulse of Villanova basketball what he thought about them laying 10 to Xavier and Tommy. As you all know, Tommy, good kid. He said too many points. Take Xavier.
Oh, no.
Well, obviously it wasn't enough points because Xavier just lost by 25 points. So, you know, Tommy, you just got to own it. You should have just said they're my team. They're on a route. They're on a route. Xavier at home. You know, instead he went the other way. You know how some people do that? Oh, I bombed that test, and then the teacher hands out the papers, and oh, the people that thought they bombed the test get a 96. So congrats, Tommy, on reverse mushing your team.
Yeah, I guess he was a little scared off at the getting the number one ranking back after, you know, they were bounced off momentarily. So that was it. Definitely looked like it was going to be a close game based on what I was reading today. So that didn't happen. You're absolutely right. So let's get back to football for a sec. What a game. And we'll start with you, Andy. I mean, this is definitely a game that was slow to start, obviously, but the second half of the game really just lit with fire. And you got to give Saban all the credit in the world for making that bold decision, which I saw in the tweets. You were not really in on it in the beginning, but give it credit to Saban. He went for it, and it ended up paying off. So your thoughts about what was a tremendous game?
Yeah, listen, you know, everyone can say it looked like a genius move and it was such an easy decision. In hindsight, obviously, it paid off. But if it was such an easy decision, then why didn't he play in the Auburn game? You know, Hurts looked just as bad as in the Auburn game over Thanksgiving weekend. He didn't make a change then. He didn't make a change any time this year. The only time he got to play this year was in garbage time, which he did throw. I mean, having said that, though, he's a true freshman, and being in the national championship down 13-0 is a lot different than playing at home up 47-3 or whatever against Ole Miss or Mercer or Vanderbilt, whoever it may be. But it paid off. You know, I thought it was, you know, definitely a pretty bold decision, but that's why Nick Saban's Nick Saban, and I'm Andy on the couch. But there were some moments where he looked raw. Like there was that, he threw an interception, and it looked like it was a play that wasn't even designed to be a throwing play. You know, all the receivers were blocking, their heads weren't looking at the ball or in that direction. But obviously I guess Saban felt that something needed to be done, and, Tua lived up to the expectations. You know, Trent Dilfer, you know, many of you disagree, but Trent Dilfer today on either Dan Patrick's show or one of the shows said that he wouldn't be surprised if he won the Heisman next year. Really? Really, Trent? After 30 minutes of football? Can we calm down? Look, I root for Alabama, and I wouldn't say the guy's going to win the Heisman. But on the other side of the coin, I mean, Hurts 25-2 is a starter. He was SEC Offensive Player of the Year last year, but obviously his throwing skill was, you know, I guess his knock, his weak point. You know, someone told me on Monday night that, you know, he's like watching Tyrod Taylor all over again. You know, he can scramble, but he can't really throw. He can't throw deep, can't throw on the run. And I guess against Clemson, he didn't look very good. He didn't look very good against Clemson last year in the national championship. And then, you know, in the first half of Monday night's game, they didn't have a first down. So, you know, Saban made the move. I didn't see it coming. So, but that was definitely pretty remarkable. The game itself, you know, the first half was a little flat. Obviously, Georgia was able to convert on a lot of third downs. That 3rd-and-20 play by Michelle, you know, that's very un-Alabama-ish. you know, Alabama's going to give up third and 20s on draw plays. And Fromm looked amazing. You know, I think they're going to look back and say, how did that game get away from us? You know, they had the ball up 20-7, and then Alabama got an interception on a ball that basically was thrown off against the helmet and went up in the air, and a defensive lineman intercepted it. You know, that's just one of those wonky things. But it's almost like Georgia won the week before by Oklahoma getting tight with their play calling. And then at the end of Monday night's game, Georgia's offense kind of got a little tight themselves. The kicking game obviously was a little wonky too. Alabama, they missed two field goals. Georgia has a great kicker, you know, overtime. That's pretty special. I don't know if there's been a overtime national championship game. I don't think that 2005 game went into overtime, but in any event, the second half made up for the lackluster first half. I'm not a Georgia guru. I didn't read any Georgia papers or anything like that, but I thought Chubb got more carries when Michelle was actually getting the better production from when they called his number. I guess if they could do it all over again, they, you know, try to do something with that possession when they're up 20-7 to basically put the game away. And if Alabama could do it all over again, yeah, they'd, you know, start 2-0. But, you know, some people weren't too keen to watch that game with it being SEC versus SEC. And, you know, Georgia had a pretty, you know, tough schedule, and they didn't really have a lot of close games. The Notre Dame game in the beginning of the year was close. The second half against Auburn, when they lost, it got away from them. And then the SEC championship game rematch against Auburn was close, and then the Rose Bowl. But I think Kirby Smart, you know, got that team in a pretty good position. And so maybe, you know, they don't play each other that often because of SEC East, SEC West, like, rotation. But, you know, maybe you could see them, you know, match up every December in the years to come. But, you know, Saban, it's like he is kind of like a captain, no fun. They are very machine-like. He won five of them now there. And, you know, next year they're probably going to be preseason number one. And I guess we'll just see what happens. You know, our friend Ron is already calling for an Alabama-Ohio State final next year.
Yeah, and not only that, though, but on top of that, you mentioned how Bama and Georgia appeared to be on track to meet each other every year for the SEC championship game. And I'm hearing a lot of experts raving about the Georgia recruiting class, and so that's big time. So both these programs appear to be here for years to come, and definitely fitting to see them in the national championship game from that standpoint. But it's interesting because, like, I don't think a lot of people predicted that when the year began. I mean, naturally, you wouldn't predict two teams from the same conference necessarily to meet in the final, but it worked out. I mean, it was a good game. Like, Andy, like you were saying, like, everybody was, this game's going to be bad, you know. And then we watched the game, and then the game ended up being a good game. So I think that worked out. So anyway, let's go to John. Let's get your thoughts on the national championship game.
Yeah, it definitely got off to a slow start there. Georgia pretty much dominated both lines of scrimmage for the first half, and you could tell by the end of the game they were a little worn out. Maybe that had to do with the overtime game the previous week, if that kind of took its toll. And obviously the Bama QB switch certainly had an effect as well. You know, I mean, obviously it was a bold call by Saban, but at the same time, you could just tell Hurts, he was doing nothing in the game. I mean, all right, well, what's the worst that could happen? Tua scores 0 points in the second half and didn't score anything in the first half. So, I mean, I see why people are calling it a bold call, but at that point, I mean, really, what do you really have to lose? Other than, you know, people playing Monday morning quarterback and saying, oh, you should have never pulled Hurts, the guy that got you there. Okay, I get it, but at the same time, the offense was clearly doing nothing. And he certainly gave him a shot in the arm. The key play in the game, and Andy mentioned it, was right after they intercept Tua. I think they had the ball. Jordan had the ball on the Bama, 45-yard line, and they're looking to go up at least 16 points there with a field goal, and they get the interception off the dude's helmet. The big guy runs it down inside of the Georgia 30-yard line, and then Bama just takes it over from there. And even after all that, I mean, you had your moments when Georgia, you thought they were going to win, especially in overtime after you watch Bama's kicker. I mean, that guy was just completely nervous. He just duck hooked two kicks. And after that sack on first down, you're thinking, oh, my God, all Georgia's got to do is just keep them, you know, keep them ahead of the sticks, give them maybe 10 yards, and there's no way that guy was going to make a field goal. And for some reason, they play man-to-man coverage with the safeties, you know, way back, and just they let a guy behind them, and Tua makes a great throw, and Bama's national champion. So it was obviously a really exciting finish, and, you know, personally, I would have not liked to have seen the All-SEC final, but, I mean, you know, what am I going to do? I'm not going to watch the college football championship after, you know, watching the whole season. I mean, it's like, you know, watching a movie and then walking out with 10 minutes left and not seeing the ending. I mean, you have to watch the game at that point. But so, yeah, it was certainly really exciting. We'll see where each team goes from here. I mean, you got to figure that Jalen Hurts is going to be transferring out. I don't see how he could be the starter next year. Someone was making the joke on Twitter that, you know, the next season of Last Chance U, I don't know if you guys ever seen that show on Netflix, you know, Jalen Hurts will be at that school, not that community college now. We'll see him next year. But, yeah, you got to figure Tua is going to be the guy for Bama. And really, late in the game, all their plays were being made by freshmen or redshirt freshmen, which is pretty scary that Saban waited to the national championship game to unleash all these guys, especially in the second half. So, and then Georgia, I saw that Eason, their quarterback who started the year before he got hurt and then Fromm took over, he's actually transferring to Washington, which is interesting. They certainly could need a spark after, you know, what happened with the Pac-12 this bowl season. We can certainly talk about that in a little bit. But overall, I mean, a really, really exciting game after the slow start. I think the ratings, came in pretty well, which, you know, you got to make ESPN and the SEC happy, that's for sure. And I guess my next question is, when's the UCF versus Alabama game? Because I think we'd all be interested in that one. You know, if some millionaire like Jeff Bezos, you know, said, all right, I'll give $100 million and we'll stream the game on Amazon, UCF versus Alabama, I think everyone would watch that. That would be a pretty interesting idea. But can't believe the season's over, and we'll slug along until summer comes along again and we can start reading the preview magazines. So certainly good stuff indeed for the championship game on Monday night.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. It was a really good year in college football, very competitive and had twists and turns and changes, and certainly we saw plenty of those in the bowl season as well. So we'll go back to Andy for a sec, and let's recap the bowl season. And look, I am not disagreeing with anybody who says that the Pac-12 was soft this year in the bowls. They were terrible. 1-8? 1-7? Whatever it was. It was awful. And that among other things, but some good games, some blowout games. I mean, FAU trashed whoever the heck they played. I think it was Akron. So you had ups and downs and good in-betweens, and the playoff was pretty good. So we'll get your thoughts on the bowls, Andy.
Yeah, it's funny. Pac-12 is a complete joke. I don't want to hear next year from, you know, Patty the Pac-12 homer about no respect, or their games are – the kickoff for these games limit their exposure, and they did it to themselves this year. Absolute fucking clown show. You know, Washington's head coach this year was whining about how he was playing, you know, Friday night games, Saturday night, 10:30 East Coast starts, limiting their exposure. And right after that, they lost to Arizona State. And then they looked like fools against Penn State. You know, Penn State, I hate Penn State, but maybe they're the fifth best team in the country. Maybe they got left out of the playoff. But they could not get Penn State off the field. Washington guys were mocking Barkley It's like, you know, no, slow your roll. And they're soft. They're absolutely soft. USC looked like they wanted no business being in that game against Ohio State. You know, in the second half, they had chances to cover. They had chances to move the ball downfield. But they were in the red zone here and there, and they looked like absolute dogs. Arizona, remember last fall we were talking about both their coaches potentially being gone, and it'd be fun to bet against them. And then they ended up having halfway decent seasons, and then their coaches still ended up getting fired. So they're shaking things up in Arizona and Arizona State. The only team that won in the Pac-12 was Utah. Apparently, Utah is like 14-1 or something in their bowl game. So something to remember. UCLA didn't play Roseman. And, you know, they looked competitive for half against Kansas State. They actually had an early lead, and then they looked like dogs. Oregon also didn't want to play Boise State in the Vegas Bowl. Washington State, hey, Mike Leach, he doesn't care about your bowl mania. And Luke Falk had a broken wrist, and they really kept that under wraps until basically the day of the game. And then their backup looked like an absolute ding-dong, and they didn't look competitive against Michigan State. And then Stanford covered, but they blew it at the end to TCU. Just a bad, bad job out of the Pac-12. I don't want to hear about them next year. Okay, prove it. They absolutely laid egg after egg after egg after egg in the bowl mania, in the bowl season. They're clowns, you know. I don't know who's going to step up next year. Might be Washington. Might be your school, Dave. I don't know, but I don't want to hear it. Look me up next December, late November when there's a team flirting with one of the four spots. But they looked like absolute crap. You know, 40 bowl games. There's some entertaining ones for sure. Some losers, some winners. You know, one of the biggest losers might have been that Utah State field goal kicker who apparently was the Mountain West, the kicker of the, you know, conference kicker, all conference, and he missed four field goals, you piece of shit. How about that Wake Forest Texas A&M game? That was crazy. That was a twist and turn game. Oklahoma State, Virginia Tech was halfway decent. You know, there was some of these games were almost like 3 weeks ago, so it's hard to actually remember. I will say the Pinstripe Bowl, I said I wouldn't watch it, but then I was having happy hour with my mom in California, and the bar did end up having that game on, so I watched a little bit of that fourth quarter. Higher score than we all thought it would be. You thought that game might have been a 13-10 final, and it was, you know, 28-21 or something like that. So, you know, but in Yankee Stadium, it's like 40 degrees. Give me a break. Christmas Eve, Aloha Bowl was fun. Fresno State, Houston. The Army-San Diego State game, that was entertaining. Even though neither team could stop each other's run game, that was a little disappointing. And then I guess that's basically all. I'm just going by, like, my mind at this point, so I don't really remember a lot of the earlier games. I know that first Saturday there was a lot of you know, the Vegas Bowl was a blowout, and there's a lot of like blowouts early on. Like you said, Dave, like FAU destroyed Akron, and then Louisiana Tech killed SMU, even though I thought that game might have been a little closer, but you know, Louisiana Tech just embarrassed SMU. SMU had like no coaches, and one of those, like, the, you know, because the SMU coach, I think, took the Arkansas job. So, you know, we had some matchups where the coaching staff was in complete, you know, limbo versus a team that had their coaching staff, like, in, you know, sturdy. So created some lopsided games once the game start. But I know I'm just rambling here, but if you look at the big bowls and New Year's Day, New Year's Day was really entertaining. You know, the Rose Bowl was amazing with overtime and in that setting. Even, you know, even that Notre Dame LSU game was kind of entertaining. It was a rainy game in Orlando, and you know, Notre Dame pulled it out by their ass. That big receiver like made an amazing like one hand catch down the sidelines and took it to the house. And then, yeah, as you mentioned, Jonathan, the UCF team, just great job by them. You know, their quarterback was like 3 for 15 in the first half, but they were still able to like put up points despite his awful throwing numbers. And they really were they kept the Auburn offense in check. They almost looked like Clemson in the first game of the year, the way they were able to get pressure on Auburn. And then obviously Auburn got some equilibrium back, but I think there was like a pick six in the second half that ultimately, you know, gave momentum back to UCF and they were able to hang on. So good job by UCF. It's a shame that, you know, money talks. I mean, it's not a shame money talks. It's a shame that it is what it is. And, you know, who wouldn't do what Scott Frost is doing? You'll go back to the school that you played for and make a lot more money. And then, you know, good luck to him. And then I would like to say that UCF would be in decent shoes, or, you know, in a decent position with Heupel, Josh Heupel taking the coaching job. I, you know, say what you guys want. I know all of us here like the American Conference. Some other people don't outside the program. But, you know, between Memphis and Houston and Navy and Central Florida, it's a pretty damn entertaining conference, and I will take those teams any day over, you know, the middle of the road Big Ten schools and the Pac-12 schools.
Yeah, they really did have a great year. I mean, and in the biggest spots, they all delivered for the most part. So, kudos to the AAC, which is John's conference. It must have been a glowing moment for you as a fan of that conference, John. So that, among other stories, let's get your bowl recap.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to make it sound like I'm sitting here on the couch chanting AAC like, you know, the SEC fans would, but it's certainly nice to see that clearly the best team in the league, you know, prove their worth against the team that beat both the teams in the national championship game. It's kind of funny the mental pretzel you have to put in yourself to say that UCF didn't belong or is not one of the best, I don't know, say 6 or 8 teams in the country when you think about it in that way. But regardless, I mean, I'm not even hoping for, I mean, obviously it's not going to expand for at least 8 to 10 years. So we're stuck with what we have. However, what I do think could happen is say the Peach Bowl or one of these other bowls say to themselves, okay, clearly the AAC champ is a really good team every single year. Let's give an automatic bid to the winner of the conference to play in a big bowl. And then, you know, screw the MAC and Mountain West and all those other, the Sun Belt. Okay, I mean, if they have a great team every once in a while, then they'd have to be ranked higher than the American champ to get in. Otherwise, the AAC champ gets that guaranteed spot in one of those big bowls every year. I would be fine with that. I mean, I don't even want, like, you know, don't tear up the system. The 4 teams is good controversy, and I would love to see a group of 5 team get in. But if the AAC got that guaranteed champion bowl slot in one of those big bowls, I'd be perfectly fine with that. So other than that, some thoughts on these other bowls. I'm surprised Andy didn't mention a couple teams here that just completely and utterly choked in their bowl game. First off, we'll start with Louisville, and they're playing a team, Mississippi State. Their quarterback, starting quarterback Fitzgerald, not playing. Their coach Mullen goes to Florida. They're playing with assistant coaches who are probably looking for other jobs, and Louisville comes out and lays the turd of the year and can't beat that team. Just a complete and absolute disgrace. Bobby Petrino proves time and time and again that he's an utter clown to not even beat that Mississippi State team, ruining my bowl mania scenario. I mean, that was just an absolute joke. They couldn't win that game. And people talking about Lamar Jackson being an NFL quarterback. Are you kidding me? Okay, he's a great athlete. He can run. But he threw 4 interceptions and looked absolutely miserable throwing the ball. Can he make it in the NFL as an athlete? Sure. I don't know what position he could play. He could certainly have the athletic ability, but I do not see him as a quarterback. Just a horrible game by him, and that was just an absolute disgrace. So, you can tell I'm bitter. Memphis had a pretty bad loss. I mean, I did give praise to the AAC, so we'll bash them here. I mean, I know Iowa State's kind of that tough, gritty team, but there's no way you should lose that game in your home stadium as a 10-2 team. That was just pretty bad, but they still had a great year, but that was a bad loss for a bowl game. And then let's get to Michigan. I mean, come on, up 19-3 against a South Carolina team that literally had not moved the ball an inch the whole game, and then they somehow give up 23 unanswered points. I like they kept turning the ball over in the worst spot. It's just I don't know what's going on with Michigan. I mean, is the Jim Harbaugh honeymoon over at this point? It might be, because that was just as bad as of a loss as you can get, up 19-3 against that South Carolina team. So a lot of soul searching for Michigan after that loss. Some of the earlier bowl games, Andy kind of touched on it. It was funny, like, for the first, 20 games or so, I literally could not miss on my Bowl Mania scenarios. Just like I had a much easier time picking the freaking Dollar General Bowl than I did picking the Rose Bowl. So I guess that just goes to show you that I follow way too much college football for the small conferences, but the big ones, it's just like, I don't know, flip a coin. But certainly a fun bowl season. The Pac-12, just an absolute disgrace. I mean, some of the matchups were tough, I get it, but to go 1-8, I mean, you couldn't win two games? I mean, come on. That was just, that was really bad. And then the Rose Bowl, I guess once Bob Stoops went down to the sideline, he kind of transformed himself into Lincoln Riley, because that was just some hideous play calling in the second half and overtime. You take the ball out of Mayfield's hands in overtime, I just did not understand that. They had so many chances to put that game away, and he got cardinal tight, as we like to say, and it ultimately cost them. I thought they should have went 4th and 1 in overtime. It was like, 4th and a half yard. I mean, you got to go for it there. I know, second guessing, but I mean, they weren't going to stop Georgia at that point. Georgia had been starting to wear them down. And as we saw, Georgia ran it right in the second overtime. So I thought that was a bad job by him. He'll learn from it. He's a young coach, but they really just blew their opportunity there. Let's see, any other bowl games to mention? No, I think me and Andy pretty much covered most of them. He had some good points on a lot of the failures and the good games. But overall, I mean, I thought this was a pretty entertaining bowl season. I mean, the matchups on paper were pretty good, as we talked about on the show before the break. And they delivered, especially the big games, which is all you can hope for. So good job by the committee to set those matchups. And, we'll hope for the same next year.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you guys were both saying, it's sad to see this end, because it has been a fun year in college football. And what we hope for is more of the same next year. We'll hear more from Bama. We'll hear more from Georgia. We'll hear more from some of the top teams like, Oklahoma too, and Ohio State. I see where Beavs is coming from, predicting Ohio State to make the title, because they're going to have a new quarterback, and their defense continues to be really good. So I could totally see that. And then it's a gut check time for the Pac-12. So, and that's how it ends. We go to the spring, we go to signing day, we go to spring practices, spring games, and then the journey begins anew for the 2018 season. So now let's move on to bigger things. We are going to check out the NFL's wild card weekend, and there have been a lot of years where the wild card weekend's pretty underwhelming. This was not that weekend. It was a very good weekend. Some really crazy finishes throughout the NFL. I mean, the Chiefs stunned by the Titans after going up 21-3 at home. You just can't make it up with Andy Reid. Falcons shut down the Rams offense. I have some thoughts on it too, but I'll get everybody else's thoughts first. Jaguars squeak out a win in just an ugly game against the Bills. And the Saints survive a wild comeback by the Panthers to win 31-26. A good game. I got to give it to Cam Newton. I did not expect anything out of him. He played a great game. But I do think it was tough to take that, after getting hit pretty hard, that they basically just let him back in the game, even though you're supposed to keep him out of the game because the concussion protocol, you got to go through the tent and everything. They pretty much faked it and let him go back in the game. It reminds me of week one against Denver a couple years ago, where pretty much the same thing happened. Like, he got hit hard in the head, and they're like, let him just go back in the game. It's like, if Cam decides to put some big lawsuit against the NFL, they've got evidence against themselves here. That's pretty bad. But other than that, there was a really good game, and Breeze was on his game too. It's a good game. And somebody had to lose, so the Saints ended up winning that one. So that's it for the wild card weekend from my point of view. Let's go to Andy and let's get your thoughts of last week's games.
Yeah, well, I'll try to talk without getting super mad, but I will. As we go down memory lane here, getting fired up. Chiefs, you're up 21-3, and you can't fucking put away the Tennessee Titans. If you were to list teams that could come back from 21-3 in the NFL, you wouldn't write the Tennessee Titans. They would be on the bottom of the list. And yet, here they are. They did it. Way to give Kareem Hunt all those touches, Andy Reid. Now, having said that, I mean, goodness gracious. Like, I think the second half, their third down execution for Kansas City absolutely killed them. And they're like third and two, third and three. Very manageable third down situation where they get the first down and they're right on the cusp of field goal range and putting some more points on the board, putting away the team. And they could not do that. There was one situation where they had Alex Smith run like a triple option situation, and they lost 3 yards on the play. And that, I think that ended up being the drive where Mariota caught his own touchdown pass. And here's the thing. If you're gambling on a team and the team that you're gambling against, their quarterback catches their own touchdown, probably not a good sign. And it clearly wasn't. It got to the point where I was, you're not going to cover. I'm just rooting for Tennessee at this point. Andy Reid, you're just you're up 21-3. I know Kelsey got hurt, but there's other guys on the team. There's other guys on the team. Just because he got hurt, don't go into a turtle shell mode, and they did. And then they let Derrick Henry just go absolutely nuts. You know, he did nothing for basically, two and a half quarters. And he ends up with like 150 yards or whatever. It's embarrassing. It's bad. With Andy Reid. And then the Rams-Falcon game, I guess the Rams got a little, they saw they were in the playoffs, the big stage, and I've been a little too much to handle for the coach and the team. You know, they weren't experienced. And I know we hate the Falcons. We know we call the Falcons bullies and paper tigers and frauds and all that, but they've been there. You know, they were the defending NFC champion. So they've actually been in that spot before. And I don't know. I don't know the Rams schedule. Maybe the teams that they played this year outside the conference weren't that great. I don't know. I don't know their schedule off the back of my head. I remember the Dallas game. You know, they killed Dallas. They killed Seattle. I don't know what their strength of schedule was. Maybe they...
Well, the Giants were in there.
They just took advantage of it. They beat the Giants. I don't know. Maybe the moment was just too big for them, but maybe this will be a growing experience, 4 years from now when, it's the Rams and the Niners owning the NFC West. They can be like, well, we learned a lot from that Atlanta game. We'll see what happens. But one thing I didn't like was, again, I knew they weren't going to cover, after Farrell Cooper just bucked another punt. But in the second half, they were still in the game, but time was of the essence, and there's Jared Goff throwing checkdowns well short of the first down marker. Your clock's ticking. The clock's ticking. You know, we can do something. Throw the ball downfield. Force it. You might have to force it at this point. There's no tomorrow. And he's la-di-da, time-consuming drive, and it just didn't look good for him. And then, the replays, it's just not a good Saturday night over here. The Bills game, no comment. It's just who wants that game? That first half, man, was like the Bills gave the Jags those 3 points. Just an eyesore. whatever. And then the fourth game, yeah, if you had the Saints minus five or six or whatever it was, you're pissed that Cam Newton was allowed to go back in there. There's got to be some sort of rule where if you basically collapse before you get to the sideline after you get your bell rung, you should probably sit. But he didn't, and he ends up throwing a stripe to McCaffrey to just absolutely destroy the Saints' bet. Entertaining game, very entertaining game. I mean, the Panthers missing that 25-yard field goal was a killer. The Saints offense, it's almost like the Panthers did everything they could to keep Kamara and Ingram in check, but then they were giving up big pass plays. That was the price they paid. Like, we'll stop the run, but you're letting Drew Brees just carve you up, 15, 20-yard pass plays downfield. And especially in that first half, they look great. And then in the second half, the Saints, they had some drives stall here and there. Carolina woke up on offense. We know the ending. Fuck Sean Payton for going for it on fourth and one from midfield, you arrogant ass clown. And then Drew Brees, he threw the pick. And I know it's a heat in the moment. The Panther guy intercepted the ball, but you got to swat that ball down. Just knock it down. It wasn't even like a type of interception where you're catching it in stride and you can take it to the house. He was like outstretched. He wasn't going to return that interception anywhere. So, that fourth, that kind of took the wind out of the sails a little bit. And then the intentional grounding on the second to last play of the game was a little questionable too. That was another game. Like, when that happened, I was like, now I'm rooting for Carolina to win because Sean Payton, he punt the freaking ball. Anyway, it was entertaining. Gambling wasn't fun, but it was entertaining football for the most part on Wild Card Weekend.
Yep, and certainly now the ratings did not reflect how wild this Wild Card Weekend was. The ratings were down from last year, which I find it a little surprising. I mean, that the degree to which they fell, but to me, it was just a lot of fun. I mean, yeah, you didn't have the name brand. You didn't have Rodgers in there. You didn't have the Giants. You didn't have the Steelers playing this week. They'll play next week. Same for the Patriots. So, not a lot of television brand value in this first round, but nevertheless, some very, very interesting action. So let's go to John and get your thoughts about the Wild Card Weekend.
Yeah, I just think to your point about the ratings, I mean, the TV markets weren't there, nor were the big stars this weekend. I mean, I guess you could say, Cam Newton, Drew Brees, I mean, they're pretty big stars. But just in general, I mean, Tennessee and Jacksonville and Buffalo and Atlanta, I mean, you're not going to draw a ton of eyeballs, or even the Rams for that matter. I mean, I know they're a fun story this year, but just in terms of a huge fan base, I mean, it's not like the Cowboys or the Packers. If they were in the wild card round, that would certainly draw more ratings. But I mean, that certainly doesn't take away from the quality of the games, which was, as you guys mentioned, which was excellent. The fool here said to myself after I saw the lines last Sunday, or after week 17, well, I think if I bet all four favorites, I mean, you're pretty much going to go at least 3-1 and worst 2-2. Well, try a nice bagel at 0-4. So what I was thinking with that one, like, clearly. A couple of those games could have gone either way. I mean, the Chiefs certainly was just a complete and utter disaster. Andy already covered that. I mean, you have one of the best running backs in the NFL. Kareem Hunt carried you all year. And what did he have, 10 carries the whole game? I just don't understand. I know the Titans have a decent run defense, but the play calling was just a little suspect, especially after halftime. That option play that Andy mentioned, I mean, that was the perfect example of just Andy Reid getting too cute, just doing a read option on third and one when they could just run it straight ahead and switches momentum in that game. And honestly, it's pretty much what we come to expect from the Chiefs every year in the playoffs. And I will never take them again at home in the playoffs.
as long as Andy Reid is coaching that team. And I just saw their offensive coordinator got hired by the Bears. So good luck with that. I mean, they switch out John Fox for this guy. As a Packers fan, I am not scared of Matt Nagy and his read options on 3rd-and-1 coming to coach the Bears. That's for sure. So that was a joke. The Rams-Falcons game, I was a little nervous. Out of the four teams, I was the least confident about the Rams because, as we saw, I mean, their inexperience kind of caught up to them. The Falcons have been playing great defense over the last month or so, even with Ryan and their offense kind of struggling to get points. I mean, Matt Bryant has become like their most valuable player because they really haven't been able to finish drives. And you saw it again on Saturday night. I mean, just bombed some kicks. But their defense got after the passer. I mean, they held Goff in check. Gurley only had like 100 yards, which is, you know, compared to what he has been doing, I mean, that was a really good job they did on him. So, you know, that was pretty well done from the Falcons. And we'll see when they move on now, and I'm sure we'll talk about it in a little bit. But, I mean, they're favored in Philly, so a great draw for the Falcons to possibly get back to the Super Bowl. And then on Sunday, I mean, no matter how hard Tony Romo tried to make the game exciting, Bills and Jaguars was just – it was pretty much what you would have expected from two teams that a little offensively challenged, Jaguars with a great defense, and two teams that haven't been in the playoffs in a long time, and you get a 10-3 game. On the last play, when Ramsey intercepts the ball from after Peterson comes in, I mean, that was inevitable. The only thing you needed to know was, okay, you know you're going to intercept Peterman here. Are they going to run it back for a touchdown to cover the spread? And honestly, the more and more I look at that replay, he really didn't need to dive for that ball. He could have just got that in stride and just kept running. But it is what it is at that point. That would have been kind of a miracle cover. But, if Blake Bortles plays like that again, I mean, they're not going to win scoring 10 points in Pittsburgh. I don't care how good their defense is. You know, Ben is going to get – they're going to get at least 17-20. So the Jags offense is going to have to do better than that if they want to win in Pittsburgh. But, you know, good for them for kind of validating their season, I guess, with a playoff win. We'll see what happens. And then the Panthers and Saints, you know, I don't even know where to go with this game. I completely agree with Andy's thoughts. Once it was clear that the Saints could not cover the spread, once, you know, Peyton went for that fourth down and failed, I was rooting for the Panthers to win at that point because just they should have not even come to that situation. You know, they let McCaffrey bust loose on a blown coverage and to make the game, you know, within the 6 points. So, and I was actually pretty surprised at how well Cam played. I mean, he's had a pretty horrible month other than the game against the Packers. But, I mean, everyone, you know, the Packers would make Nathan Peterman look good this year. Let's face it. But, you know, credit to him for really playing well with not a great receiving core. And, you know, the Saints – kind of held on, and it sets up what I think is the best game of the weekend with the Saints and Vikings. And really, that one could go either way, in my opinion. But overall, it was on paper, the matchups weren't great, but it actually turned into four pretty good games. And who would have thought that the Falcons and Rams game would have been the, I guess, least competitive kind of towards the end. So a fun weekend, that's for sure.
That's true. You know, we were really looking forward to that the Falcons-Rams game. We thought, oh, this is going to come down to the end, and then it wound up being the most decisive, if you really think about it. I mean, the Rams really did not do much on offense. Their offense consisted of primarily the second half of the second quarter, where they scored, I believe it was 10 points quickly. I'm not sure exactly if it was 10, but they really gave some life in that. Other than that, they really weren't doing much, and I did, you know, one could say, well, Jared Goff got exposed, or whatever have you, but you hit it right there, John. I think the bigger reason why the Rams were limited offensively was because Todd Gurley was not doing much. And, you know, I was listening to some analysis in the game. There are two things that I think were a real problem for the Rams. Number one, they rely on a lot of motion in the backfield to get their plays, but the Falcons' defense, especially the line, was doing a really good job spreading out their guys, like their line, and even some safeties would come in, and they were holding back. They really were holding down Todd Gurley, and the fact that they limited him, everything went south after that. I mean, and obviously Cooper wasn't helping with those turnovers. Andy's right about that too. Got to give a lot of credit to the Falcon defense. I mean, their defense played really well on Saturday, And ultimately, that's what it was. That's what happened. And I was a little surprised that Matt Ryan didn't turn the ball over, at least not a lot, because you know you think about guys like Aaron Donald. They did lose Brockers for the second half, which I heard, which I understand is like a big loss for the Rams. So yeah, that was kind of disappointing. Just to really put it together, very disappointing game by the Rams. It almost seemed like they didn't realize they were in a playoff game until it was the second quarter, and by then it was too late. So, you know, try again next year. So, there you go. Any other potpourri on that before we go on to this week's games?
No, I think you guys we've touched on all the games pretty well. You mentioned, you know, some unfamiliar faces for sure. You know, no Rodgers, no Russell Wilson, no Cowboys, no Giants, no Chargers, no Ravens. So we had some teams that we're not used to seeing up through the void in January. And if we could do it all over again, I said we can't do anything. We're not playing. But Jesus, poor Chargers, man. The fact that Buffalo that lost by like 70 to them, that in, but that's just the break, you know. The Chargers were the one who was standing really in the year, you know. They lost to the Dolphins, they lost to the Jaguars in crazy form, and they lost to Denver week one. That's who they are. But I think the Chargers would have been a much livelier dog than, you know, some of the other teams in the AFC last week.
Yeah, and it's funny because they were in Jacksonville earlier in the season, and they did have a lead in the fourth quarter of that game against the Jaguars, and they blew that game, like you said. So, we'll see what happens next year. I mean, there are some teams that are kind of ready for the next phase. For the Rams, as you were saying, they're going to be set for the next few years to come, but I do wonder for them if they kind of blew it because, you know, we just mentioned it. There's no Rodgers. There was no... There really wasn't a really great field. I mean, Carson Wentz is hurt, so he's not even playing for the Eagles. You almost wonder if the Rams are kicking themselves for blowing on the golden opportunity, because they probably would have matched up nicely with the remaining teams in the NFC. And they already beat the Saints earlier this year at the Coliseum, so it makes you wonder for sure. So let's get to this week's games. All right. Well, another team that lost to the Jaguars earlier in the year was the Steelers. We'll get to that game in a moment, but let's run it down in order. We start with the Falcons at the Philadelphia Eagles. Atlanta is a 3-point favorite. You got the Titans at the Patriots in a game that has been much talked, in a team that has been much talked about, but honestly, an article from ESPN came out describing a rift between the three parties, Tom Brady, Robert Kraft, and Bill Belichick, and you know, you can have your fun with that, but it does seem like a little silly to be taking down. Oh, this could be it for the dynasty. This could be it. They've won five championships. What are we? It? Well, good, I guess, if that's it. But I don't think that's it either. I think they're back for more. So anyway, the Titans are at the Patriots. Pats are giving 13.5 at home. Jaguars and Steelers will be the early game on Sunday. Steelers are giving 7.5. I think it's too many. And the Saints are at the Vikings to close it out. And Minnesota is a 3.5-point favorite. So we will see. And by the way, if you guys are interested, I have the futures odds too, in terms of who wins the NFC. In the NFC, the favorite at this point, since the Rams are out and since they lost Carson Wentz for Philadelphia, the Vikings are the favorite right now, +135. The... Who was it? I think the Saints are next up at like +230. And then you've got the Saints and then I believe the Eagles are the last one at +550. So those are your odds. I don't remember what the Falcons one was, like +3 something else. So there you go. Okay, let's get to the divisional round and get your previews and predictions. So Andy, we'll go to you first. Hold on. Let me go grab him back. He dropped off for a sec. All right. Okay. Let's see. Is Andy back with us? Okay. Andy, are you back with us?
Yeah, I don't know what happened. The call dropped.
Anyway, okay, no worries. We're ready for your divisional round preview and predictions.
Yeah, well, with the NFC games, it's if I lean the Falcons Saturday afternoon, then I can see the vision of the Falcons showing up where they stall in the red zone, set up for field goals, where they don't have Julio Jones go off, where they can't get the running game, where the Philly defense looks good, and Matt Ryan throws terrible, ill-timed interceptions, and they show Sarkisian and Dan Quinn looking like absolute donkeys on the sidelines, and Nick Foles carves them up, and they get their running game, and their very skilled receivers going, and Philadelphia ends up winning. If I take the Eagles, then I can see Foles looking like he did the last week of the season against Dallas, like they did against the Raiders on Christmas Eve, and then I can see the Falcons just looking like they did last year for most of the year, where when Matt Ryan put MVP numbers, and both the running backs are going up and down the field. It's just, I don't know. But if I will probably lean the Falcons and regret it. I'll just take the Falcons because of their pedigree. Even when we all know they can sometimes do it in the paper tiger style. Don't forget, this is a team that blew a 17-0 lead to the Miami Dolphins at home. So be careful. Maybe don't bet this game, but if you're going to be there Saturday, on the West Coast at noon, the game's going to be starting, you're going to want to bet it. So, but be cautious, and we'll see what happens. I just can't really take the Eagles super serious with, Foles taking snaps behind center, and, Peterson's not exactly, been from Baldy. Patriots, Titans, Bill going to have his team ready to go. The internet's are going crazy because Bill had a four-minute answer, and he, unlike Mike Francesa, he listed basically 80% of the roster offensive defense for the Titans. So, whoa, Bill, he's preparing. Yeah, he's the coach. That's what coaches do. They prepare and they study the team's roster. So we'll be ready to go. I'm looking forward to, hopefully the if you haven't read about Hogan, Amendola, any of the Patriots receivers, that have been banged up throughout the year. Hogan hasn't played in about 2 months, but I guess he could have played the very last game of the year against the Jets, but they haven't been out for precautionary reasons. So hopefully he'll be ready to go. They'll need him for sure. If not this week, then definitely next week against the Steelers and the Jags. But they're favored by 13.5. I don't think Tennessee is a legit live dog to upset the Pats outright. So especially weather could be an issue. It'd be in the 20s or the 30s. So remember, it was in 2004, the Titans and the Patriots played a game in Foxborough. It was literally 10 degrees out. This is back when Steve McNair was there. So I don't think it would be that cold, but it could be cold. And that was favored to win, of course, for obvious reasons. And then on Sunday, oh, my goodness, the Saints versus Vikings. It'll be the second time the Saints will be in Minnesota. They play, I think, week one on a Monday night. And the Saints revamped defense, and I think Sam Bradford was the quarterback at that point, and they let Sam Bradford just completely carve him up, and I can't shake that memory out of my mind. But our friend Peter King brought it up in an article. The Saints could technically play in Minnesota three times this year if they do end up going to the Super Bowl, which would be kind of that would be something like Chris Russo could spend an entire show on. That is kind of strange. This is another game where it's like, I take the Saints, then Drew Brees will be in complete ass clown mode, and the Vikings will just neuter them on offense and do just enough offensively to squeak by. This Vikings can't really, it's crazy. They've been a team that's been on the rise for 3 years now. 2 years ago,
Bridgewater, then Bridgewater gets hurt. And then, you know, but their defense is good, and they have a great coach. And I don't know how they do it offensively. And then this year, they were, again, this is a team on the rise. And you know, Dalvin Cook gets hurt. And the, like, now they have, like, they have no one at quarterback and running back. But, you know, Keenan is doing well, and now they've got, like, two running backs that are halfway decent, and that receiver, Thielen, I don't know how to pronounce his name, he has stepped up, and, yeah, that defense is really good. So it should be a good game. Is that dome? We'll probably is it retractable, or is it indoors 100%? Do you guys know?
Well, they said that they could. Now, my understanding is that it's a. Actually, I don't know. John, do you know?
I'm not sure. I want to say it's not retractable, but even if it was, I mean, they're not going to open it on, you know, January 15th in Minnesota. Yeah. I mean, come on, that's not happening.
It'd be interesting.
Too cold for that. Well, anyway, yeah, I guess I would probably. I'm a glutton for punishment. I'd probably take the ass clown and just tweet up in a rage on Sunday afternoon because I can't. If I bet against the Saints and they look good, if I take the Saints, they turn an ass. It's just I don't know. But I think the Saints are, you know, they're playing well. They've got offensive firepower. They're just their own worst enemy. So many times the coach gets too cute. And we saw it last week. Don't be cute and don't be arrogant. Just coach. Just come on. It's not. Don't be a freaking ass clown. The coaching advantage has to go to the Vikings in that matchup. But again, it's Case Keenum. So, you know, we'll see what happens. One of these teams that have had a bye, at least one will probably come out flat. That's just the way it is. So who knows which team will be. And then Jacksonville, Pittsburgh, as John mentioned, the board is going to play a lot better. And then what version of Antonio Brown are you going to get? Are you going to get the 80% Antonio Brown? Are you going to get 90% Antonio Brown? Are you going to get 50% Antonio Brown? That'll be a game changer. And Jacksonville does have a good defense. If you take them getting the points, if you don't want them with the ball. I know it's strange to say, but it's like, because you don't want their quarterback doing something stupid. So you almost want them on defense and just holding the other team to field goals. But I think Pittsburgh will be able to score some points. They've got Le'Veon Bell, and Roethlisberger is been in the league for many years, and he knows his way around the playoffs. I'll be hard pressed for Jacksonville to win outright. Just for entertainment purposes, I root for a close game. But they're gonna have to figure out how to score themselves. I don't know what they're gonna be able to do. It's Blake Bortles, so. I don't know. They create a turnover while Pittsburgh is deep in their own territory, obviously, and go for seven. When they're going to get very few chances to score. And so when they do get in a red zone, they better freaking try to step seven because three isn't going to cut it.
Just to repeat what both of you guys have been saying, Bortles needs to have a better performance than that if they're going to win. And not to say that he can't do it because the Steeler defense can be very soft sometimes. But he knows what's on the table. He's got to step up his game, even if he's got to launch. We'll see. Okay, John, let's get your thoughts about this week's action.
Yeah. The first game, I think the line is kind of telling me where to go with that one. I think you got to take the Falcons just because of how well their defense is playing, especially after how Foles looked so inept against the Raiders and the Cowboys, who, let's face it, they don't have good defenses, and he couldn't do anything. He had the one good game against the Giants, but look, the Giants might have been the worst defense in the NFL, but at the end of the season, they pretty much, quit, and a lot of, we know about all that turmoil, so I'm going to throw that game out. The other two games, Foles, they couldn't move the ball down the field, and he just looked awful. And, I'm going to assume that not much has changed. I mean, they're obviously going to
want to get their running game involved and not have to rely on Foles as much. He does have some good targets to throw to with Ertz and Alshon Jeffrey. I mean, they're certainly talented players. So if they can kind of get a little maybe momentum going on the ground, they can set up some play action and those kind of things. But just, you know, on the basis of what we've seen lately, I don't see how you can take the Eagles. And I don't like, you know, wagering or making a selection on the Falcons, you know. But I think in this situation, I think they're the hotter team with the better defense that'll do just enough. I mean, Ryan, they might stall in the red zone again, but I can just see them end up winning this game by, I don't know, like a touchdown or so, a low scoring kind of game, like 20-13 or something like that. And I think they'll move on. You know, you got to figure that the Patriots are going to take care of business pretty easily. I think I saw the spread was, last I saw, was either 13 or 14. I mean, there is some backdoor potential there if you want to get crazy and take the Titans. The one thing I will say for the Titans is the Patriots have kind of had a history of not playing their best defense against that kind of quarterback. I mean, earlier this year, you know, Cam Newton and Deshaun Watson both had huge games back-to-back against the Patriots defense. And, you know, you kind of see Mariota in that same kind of mold, that running quarterback. The problem is the Titans coaching staff really handcuffs them with what they want to do on offense. And which is, it's kind of sad that if the Titans had lost that game on Saturday, Mularkey was gone, fired. And now all of a sudden, you know, they make a big comeback with some, you know, with some Chiefs bad decision-making thrown in there. And now, you know, oh, we love Mularkey, he's coming back next year. That's probably the worst thing, honestly, that could happen to them, because they need a new offensive scheme for Mariota. But regardless, I think if they open it up a little bit and go spread, they could have some success in this game. But I don't think they will, and I think it's going to be, you know, like 31-17, something like that. I mean, there's a potential for a backdoor, but I mean, you really don't want to chance it, and the Pats will move on. I think the Jaguars and Steelers is going to be a close game. I like the Jaguars with the points in this one, just because their defense is so good. And again, I mean, Bortles has to do something. If he plays like he did last week, the Jags have no chance, and they're not going to cover the spread. But I think he kind of got some jitters out in that game. You know, it's crazy to say. I don't think he'll be as nervous in this one as he was at home to you know, win a home playoff game and after winning the division. You know, that would have been a pretty big failure to lose to the Bills. But now it's kind of like you're playing with house money. You know, they won the game at home, and now they're going on the road to a team that they beat pretty handily earlier in the season. I know it's hard to beat a team twice in the same year, but I mean, Ben had 5 interceptions in that game. I mean, he looked awful. So, I mean, they have the best secondary in the NFL. You know, Brown at 80% is better than most guys at 100%, but still a tough matchup, you know, on the outside with Ramsey and Boye. You know, Le'Veon Bell will do some damage, but I think this will be pretty close, like a 20-17 type game. I don't know who's going to win, but I definitely can see the Jaguars staying in this game with their defense. And, I think the line's 7.5. I'll certainly go with the Jags on this one. In the last game, I'm completely with Andy on this. I don't know who to take in this game, because I kind of want to root for the Saints because I don't want to see the Vikings get to a Super Bowl in their home stadium. But at the same time, I hate rooting for the Saints because it's just, like Andy said, you know, Peyton just outsmarts himself, and it's just it's just hard to watch sometimes because you're so frustrated watching the Saints. But I don't know. The Case Keenum story has to come to an end here at some point, right? I mean,
yeah.
I can't believe how solid this guy has played all year. And he's just, I mean, maybe he's really improved his game and he's could be a hot free agent next year. I think he signed a 1-year contract, so he's going to be a free agent. So, you know, maybe he'll be someone else's, you know, quarterback next year and play like this again. But I don't know. I just think in a game like this, I think the Vikings could be the one team coming out a little rusty, especially on offense. Their defense is really good. I mean, we're not going to say it's not. I think they'll be fine. But I could see Keenum not playing well in this game. And I don't know. This is a tough one. I'll have to gun to my head. I'll go with the Saints, and we'll get an all NFC South NFC Championship game, which is pretty crazy. I think we've had enough of the NFC South that we could get an all NFC South Championship game, which would be probably be a lot of fun because it's
a huge
rivalry, and those teams always seem to play close games, so that'd be pretty nice, a pretty competitive game. But that could go either way. But I say gun to my head, I'd take the points because you got to figure it's going to be a 3-point game. So I think you got a chance for some couple dogs to win this weekend, and hopefully it's some, you know, competitive games down to the end like we had last weekend. I think it should be. I think realistically the only game you think would really not be that close in the end of the Patriots game. The other three really definitely have some potential.
Yeah, yeah, I'm with you on all of that. I think, and I love your analysis of the Jaguar game, because I mean, I feel similarly. I don't think, because it's always a trap. Like when you hear, oh, well, you know, the Jaguars had their shot, they didn't look good, they're going to get blown out. And I really, if you follow either the Jaguars or the Steelers all year, that would not be something that you would feel after following these teams all year. I mean, we all know that the Steelers play down to every team. And I think that this could end up being very similar to that, to the most of the season. And it's also true that one team out of this group ends up coming out flat, any of these home teams. And so this could be that team. I mean, they might win by 8, you know, like they could cover the spread and win by 8 points or something like that, or even win by 10. But
Tomlin does go for 2. Weird spot.
That's true. Like all the time. So there is always that on the table. It's a tricky one, but the Steelers are going to win the game. I just don't know if it's going to be probably going to be a close game. So I'll go that way on that game. Let's go back to Saturday's games. Falcons, Eagles. I'm going to be probably on an island with this, but I'm going to take the Eagles. You know, it's kind of weird. Why would I take the Eagles? I don't know, because I still think that the Falcons have problems with the red zone offense, and the Eagles' defense really is good. It's not going to be a pretty win, but I mean, I think they'll find a way to win, believe it or not. So I'll go Eagles. Going to be a close game either way. Titans-Pats, go with Pats. I don't know if they're going to cover the 13.5, but I do think that they'll win. They should have no issue. Like, in other words, the game won't be in doubt for the most part. That would definitely be a surprise if it was, but you know, the NFL, you never know how this stuff goes. Okay, so then what do they have? Saints-Vikings, and wow. I don't know. I don't know at all. I guess I'll go Saints. I mean, the experience certainly is undeniable. But that Vikings defense is very good. That's the only thing. So you gotta watch out for it. But I'll go Saints. I'll be a little bit of a bold predictor this week. So there you go. So I have Eagles, Patriots, Steelers, and Viking. Wait, no, I said Saints. Yeah, I said Saints for the last one. So there you go. Final thoughts time. Let's go to Andy in Seattle.
Final thought. Don't really have any. It's always funny to take inventory when college football's over. It's crazy how fast it flies by. You know, it starts in late summer, and it ends right after New Year's. Next year's going to be weird because I think they're going to do a playoff. I think they're going to do like a semis on like Saturday the 29th because they're not going to do it on Sunday. That'll be the NFL day. And then New Year's Eve on Monday, New Year's Eve on Monday, and then New Year's Day, you're going to have, you know, the remaining New Year's 6 bowls, but the playoffs are already going to be done, but you're still going to watch the Rose Bowl and the Sugar Bowl, provided that it's not like David Shaw versus Iowa again. It'll just feel weird, and I'm already trying to find, like, the bowl schedule for next year just to see what we'll be looking at. But that's a long way away, but it's just, it's fast. It just goes so fast. And now, now we have a couple more NFL games, and then it's college basketball and hot stove and NBA and golf to fill the void of the real world, as we all know, is just a fiasco of late.
One more thing on the golf, that tournament that we had last weekend in Hawaii. I heard that Dustin Johnson had an incredible shot, a hole-in-one on a par 4. I've never even heard of anyone doing that before. Your thoughts on that tournament, Andy?
It was almost a hole-in-one. It was something right out of, like, the Tiger Woods PlayStation game, where you'd be like, that could never happen in real life. But it did happen in real life. It was straight as an arrow. What's funny is that he thought he caught it a little thin, and he didn't realize how good it was until he got down there. It would have been funny if he tapped in the putt with his driver, you know, driver, eagle. But he had the flat stick out for it. But it was crazy. It definitely was pretty crazy.
Good stuff. All right, final thoughts, John?
Yeah, nothing else to add. I mean, I think just about every team that we have left in the playoffs, I think if you eliminate the Titans and then the Eagles, just because I don't think they'd be really competitive in the Super Bowl, I think every other team, I think you'd have a pretty good matchup for the Super Bowl, which is what you're hoping for at this stage of the season. So that should be pretty good. Other than that, yeah, I mean, we're coming down to an end here, and we'll move on to college hoops and golf and a little NBA once the weather gets a little warmer for the playoffs. So certainly we'll keep the calendar moving. It'll help fill the void until training camps and everything else starts up again in August. So it's been a fun year, and you know, we'll enjoy these last couple of weeks for sure.
Yeah, good to break it all down with you guys again tonight. Hope we can get you guys back and even Ron back for next week's games. It's looking like a pretty even NFL playoffs this year, so if we can get it together again, that'd be great. But other than that, enjoy the games, guys, and have a great weekend. Good chatting with you guys.
Thanks. We'll see you.
All right.
All right. Yeah. Thanks, Dave. Nice to talk to you all.
Likewise. All right. Take care, guys. All right. Well, that's it for this week. We hope to be back next week with another football show, but hope you enjoyed it. And we also have our basketball shows on the feed if you're looking for those. And have a wonderful weekend. Good luck if you have action on the games. And we'll see you next time.